Welcome back for the final hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike for one more hour. Harrison is going to be sitting in for Mike next Monday. And then the big man himself is back on Tuesday, rested and ready to raise the roof. Real couple quick notes here. Sherry, who we tried to give a DVD of VotingLies.com. I'm sorry, Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies. Sherry, we lost you. If you can call us back, 800-989-1480, so we can get your contact information. Our apologies. Give us a call. And the other folks on the line, hang on if you can. I'm going to try to get to your calls. Trying to get through a whole lot here, including when I want to play this clip here. I was on earlier this afternoon on my friend Peter B. Collins' radio show. He's syndicated all over the country. And we had on this unapologetic liar and coward by the name of John Fund. He's a Wall Street Journal editor, and he wrote a book called Stealing Elections, How Voter Fraud Threatens Our Democracy, and it's full of baloney. I'll just put it that way. Finally got to talk to him in person today on the air. He was supposed to be around for the full half hour. He wasn't. We got him for a few minutes. Here's how that went on the Peter B. Collins show earlier today with Peter B. and me and John Fund.
John, give us a minute or two summation of your book and why you feel that voter fraud is of such serious concern.
Well, the major timely impact of my book is I fear that we are heading for an election meltdown similar to what happened in Florida in 2000, because the same conditions of incompetence, bad voting systems, and lots of litigation could trip us up in this election. This is likely still, although Obama has opened up a lead, I think in the end it's likely to be a close election. If it's a close election, McCain has 5,000 lawyers, Obama has 9,000 lawyers monitoring this election. I think there's a 1 in 3 chance we're going to head towards a Florida-style round of recriminations, recounts, and rogue lawyers filing lawsuits everywhere. Some valid, some invalid.
Okay. And what is your view of voter suppression tactics that have been primarily attributed to Republican operatives?
Well, I have a section in the book on Republican strong-arm tactics, and I do discuss that. I think neither party has a monopoly on virtue. I think that voter suppression has been written about a great deal. I think that we have two civil rights at stake in this election. We fought a great civil rights struggle in the 1960s to get rid of poll taxes, literacy tests, all kinds of impediments and barriers to voting. I think we need to preserve and extend those gains. But your listeners have another civil right. They have a civil right not to have their vote canceled out by someone who shouldn't be voting, someone who's voting twice, incompetent bureaucrats who don't count their vote, and people who don't even exist. That's a civil right, too. You can be as disenfranchised from voting if you're blocked from voting as when your vote is canceled out by an invalid vote.
All right, Brad?
John, you talk about rogue lawyers filing lawsuits everywhere. The GOP has been filing lawsuits and making complaints. In fact, we got news today about 6,000 voters who were challenged in Montana, only in the Democratic counties up there, 30 days before an election, based only on the fact that they moved and they filed with the U.S. Postal Service a change of address. The officials up there say they can't believe it. They've never seen this kind of challenge, and it's causing nothing but chaos up there. Do you approve of that sort of tactic by the GOP?
Look, what I disapprove of is the tit for tat in which one side only discusses, you know, one aspect of the situation. I have not heard of this before. I'd have to look at it.
John, we don't have.
Can I finish my answer?
Absolutely.
Okay. I certainly will look into it. I certainly have seen, for example, a Republican lawsuit in Ohio regarding some absentee voters who didn't fill out the form properly because they didn't check a box. I think if you don't fill out the form properly, the rule of law dictates that your vote isn't counted. So I would say that Republican lawsuit is highly suspect. I would also tell you, though, I've talked to election officials, including a Democratic county clerk, who cannot believe that the governor of Montana told the American Trial Lawyers Convention in New York that he had manipulated the 2006 Senate election by trying to scare away election monitors on an Indian reservation and by trying to manipulate a county clerk to not reporting results in order that there would be less chance of a recount being held. Now, that speech by the Governor Schweitzer was tape recorded. Now, he says he didn't mean it. It was all a joke. Well, he's either embarrassing election officials whom he named in that speech, or he engaged in election fraud. Either one is not pretty. He's either a gigantic liar or he's a gigantic fraud.
John, you have to take his pick. You said that I agree. I don't think we need this tit for tat. Unfortunately, so far I'm only seeing tit.
I criticized two lawsuits. I criticized the Republican lawsuit in Ohio, and I criticized the Democratic governor's speech before the trial lawyers.
So
and
do
I
you condemn?
You criticize the Democratic lawsuit in exchange now, since you criticized the Republican lawsuit in Ohio, in Montana?
Do I criticize which?
In other words, what I'm simply saying is I'm tired of people who only address one side of this issue.
Oh, no, I don't address only one side of this issue, sir.
It happens on both sides, and I think if you're going to discuss this issue objectively, you have to provide and criticize examples on both sides.
And, of course, I do. I don't care who it is who's keeping Americans from voting, and I will protect any vote. I'm sorry?
What example of voter fraud concerns you, then?
Of voter fraud?
Yes.
Since the Bush Department's own Justice Department, Bush administration's own Justice Department, could only find 18 cases of voting by people who are ineligible over the past 5 years by their own numbers, despite the unprecedented amount of money and assaults that they've been putting on voters to try to come up with this phony voter fraud stuff, I'm not so concerned with voter fraud. I'm concerned with the election fraud. John, I allowed you to speak. You asked me to not interrupt you. I didn't.
I'm just asking for an answer to my question.
Okay, I'm concerned about the 100,000 phantom votes that showed up in Tarrant County, Texas in 2006 in a Republican Supreme Court election where the Supreme Court, former Supreme Court Justice who was running, saw 100,000 extra votes show up on the voting machines down there, and in Winkler County where he had previously won by 74% and 65%. He got zero votes in Winkler County. Does that concern you, John Fund?
I still have not gotten an answer to my question, which is my book has examples of voter fraud and voter suppression in both parties. I'm waiting for you to respond with an example where you think Democrats have had a problem and where there's issues that need to be investigated.
And as I told you, I have not seen, and as I told your cohort, John Von Spakovsky,
John, we have your point. Pause for a minute. Go ahead, Brad.
Let me. Your cohort, John Von Spakovsky, wrote about voter fraud that took place. Your cohort, John Von Spakovsky, wrote about voter fraud having taken place in Chicago.
I don't know him.
You don't know. You wrote about him in your book.
I don't know an individual named John Von Spakovsky.
I'm sorry, Hans Von Spakovsky.
Oh,
my apologies.
If you can't even get the name right, how in the world am I supposed to know who this person is?
Okay, cute games, John, but let me say that Hans Von Spakovsky wrote about voter fraud that took place.
He's a source.
Hans Von Spakovsky, you're just going to filibuster here, aren't you?
Is this an interview or an interrogation?
Can you ask me a question, please? I'm trying to, but you keep talking. He talked about voter fraud that took place in 1982 in Chicago, but as it turned out, it wasn't voter fraud. It was actually election insiders who were voting for other people. Now,
I'm
sorry?
That's voter fraud. How do you define voter fraud?
The way you define it, sir. I will tell you. The way that you define it. You say photo ID requirements will keep people from committing
voter fraud.
How
do you define voter fraud? I'm sorry. Have you read the book?
Okay. Voter fraud would be someone showing up who's a double voter, who's voted twice, and
That's not what I say in my book, and that's not how I define it, sir.
Okay, John, what's voter fraud?
Voter fraud is any occasion upon which someone's vote is diluted, or they're disenfranchised, or the vote is canceled out by manipulation, by conscious effort, or by incompetence that is so rampant on the part of election officials that it represents malpractice.
And your solution is photo ID at the...
I'm being interrupted again. This interview cannot go on if people don't allow me to have an interview, not an interrogation.
Go ahead, John.
Okay. Voter fraud happens many times through absentee ballots that have nothing to do with people showing up at the polls or impersonating anyone.
Right.
Voter fraud with absentee ballots is practiced by both parties. It has a long history, which is one of the reasons why liberals like Norm Ornstein at the American Enterprise Institute, why liberals like Melody Rose at the University of Portland in Oregon, and many other liberals oppose absentee voting expansion because it is an easy and too often used method for stealing votes, for inventing voters who don't exist.
I concur.
I have a whole chapter in my book on that.
And I concur with you, John.
Both parties.
How does photo ID at the polling place keep that from happening? Because I agree, absentee balloting is a problem, and it should be limited. How does photo ID keep that from occurring, John?
I don't understand. They're two separate issues. Photo ID is for people who show up and vote in person. Absentee ballot protections and a limitation on the expansive use of absentee ballots in areas where you don't have sufficient ballot integrity programs is a separate chapter of my book. You're confusing two chapters of my book.
You supported photo ID in Georgia and in Indiana, despite the proponents were unable to show. They were unable to show a single case of. John,
have you read this book?
No, I just received
it
yesterday.
You're asking questions which are completely nonsensical.
All right, gentlemen, stand by. We're going to take a break and return. No. John Fund is with us, a columnist for the Wall Street Journal and a Fox News contributor. His new book is called Stealing Elections.
Yeah, his new book is full of lies and nonsense, and I've got it here. And, for him to suggest, it was just unbelievable. The guy I was talking about in Texas who had zero votes, who got 0% of the votes, was a Republican Supreme Court justice who got screwed with the voting system. That's John Fun for you, and the fact that he's pushing photo ID restrictions at the polls as a way to keep people from, to keep somehow absentee voter fraud from happening, it makes no sense. When you hear somebody say voter fraud, correct him on it. The concern here is election fraud. Brad, in for Malloy. Stay with us. So after that last clip you heard there before the break with John Fund on the Peter B. Collins Show and me actually trying to ask him some questions while he was filibustering, he was supposed to be on for after the break. He was supposed to come back on, and he just hung up the phone. So John Fund is not only, let me write it down here, liar, democracy hater, and, oh, coward. That's John Fun for you. Let's go. Let's grab some calls here. Debbie's been holding for a while in L.A. County. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Debbie.
Hi.
Hi.
That guy makes me very, very angry.
Good.
Being an L.A. County voter, that my name disappeared from the register. Hmm. I went in the primary, and my name was gone. And I had voted in the same address, no address change, no changes whatsoever.
That's going to happen all over the country, and I keep telling people they got to call.
This was in 2004.
Yep. And you had a bad Secretary of State back then. You had Bruce McPherson. I'm a little less worried about it this year, but not a whole lot.
I had called. It told me that there was a purge of some kind when I found out exactly what finally happened.
Yeah.
After a lot of grief.
Yeah.
So I called the voter registrar's recorder office, and they told me that, oh, it's because you're registered in X location. I said, no, how can that be? So they changed me back to where I should be. Then when I go in to vote, I see that there's someone else with my name that is it's different Social Security number. It's a different mental initial. We just happen to have the first name and the last name that were the same.
Unbelievable. Listen, Debbie, I want to try to fly through some calls here. Thanks for sharing that story. And
so it does happen, everybody. Make sure you're voted. Make sure your vote counts.
Make sure, right, make sure you're registered, and please go to votersunite.org. They got a big button that says, are you registered? Tell you in all 50 states who to contact to find out if you are, even if you just voted. It's real important. Okay, let me get to, real quickly here, Kirk. Kirk in Massachusetts, sorry you had to hold so long. You had a question for Cynthia McKinney, but she's no longer here. Maybe I can answer.
Well, it was about what you said about the Democratic Congress having the power to change things. But the Democrats had in the Senate, every Democrat in the Senate, including the bad ones, like Bill Nelson and Ben Nelson, voted to restore habeas corpus. But Republicans filibustered, including Lieberman, filibustered the habeas corpus legislation and prevented it from passing. So how can Democrats make any changes when Republicans are filibustering it? It's hard. I mean, I understand that they're bad Democrats, but it's a Democrat. I mean, you can't be overestimating the power of Democratic Congress.
Okay, fair enough. But let me say this, Kirk, and I'm going to move on just because I want to get to some other calls here before the bottom. But when the Democrats were in the minority, they said we can't do anything because we're in the minority. Then they became the majority, and they said we can't do anything because our majority isn't big enough. Funny how no matter which way you go, the Republicans get what they want every single time. So I'm not sure I accept that. If they wanted to get something done, they could make the noise, and they could make it happen. That's my opinion. Kirk, let me jump to another call. Yeah. Appreciate the call, okay? All right, let me get to Don in Atlanta. Don, welcome to the Peter B. No, I did it again. See, every time I hear that. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Oh, Don.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Hey, I just want to tell you you're doing a good job first. But you forgot two more things on that list about old John Spahn. He's an idiot and a blathering fool, man. He absolutely gave me a headache within 5 minutes of listening. My head started hurting.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. Thanks, Don. I got to get to a break. Thanks, brother.
Okay.
Spread the good word. Yes, John Fund is a liar. When you see him show up on Fox News, and he shows up everywhere. He shows up on Bill Maher. He lies over there, too. People don't stand for it. Raise your voice. Raise hell. When you hear him saying there's Democratic voter fraud going on, write him and say, no, there ain't. It's election fraud. We are worried about Green News Report coming up with Desi Doyen right after this. You are listening to the Mike Malloy Show with Brad Friedman.
It's not easy being green. It seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over, 'cause you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky.
You see, I could have played that song tonight for Cynthia McKinney, Green Party presidential candidate, but no, Desiree, I saved it for you. Of course, you're listening to the Mike Malloy Show, and I saved it for Desi Doyen, who brings in our Green News Report. We started doing it for our good friends up in San Francisco at Green 960 some months ago. Whenever anyone is silly enough to let us on the air, why, we do it. And we drag Desi in here. She tells us what's going on with the latest in the Green News. And if I just stop talking now, you
might be able to get to
all
of it.
All right, go ahead.
Well, okay, so we'll start with, you may have heard about that little story this week about Wall Street needing a little bitty loan from the government, that $700 billion bailout package.
Well,
that's
not a Green News story.
Well, it is, actually, because you may have heard, I don't know, maybe people heard today that the House of Representatives actually passed the bailout legislation today.
Yeah.
And also contained in that legislation are billions of dollars in tax credits for the solar, wind, and biodiesel industries. Now, they've been waiting. You see,
so we're in the mood
things.
For this.
There's
so
something
thank God
good
they passed
there.
The $700 billion.
Well, I don't know if we can say that it's all good, but at least that part's good.
Okay.
And it ends months of uncertainty for renewable energy companies and their investors. And they've been waiting for a full year to try to get this done.
Because their tax credits were going to expire at the end of the year.
Expire at the end of the year. And the tax credits were used as a sweetener this time. And they say that that's what helped put the bailout bill over the top.
Oh,
now, it only extends the tax tax credits, depending on the industry, between 1 and 8 years. And just for comparison's sake, established sources of energy like oil and gas and nuclear, they get permanent tax incentives. They don't have to be voted on every time.
Alternative fuels need to get this special voted every couple of years.
Exactly.
And, of course, they couldn't have possibly passed that without passing the $700 billion
bailout. They had the chance to do it 8 times already this year, and just for various reasons, because it was attached, it's usually used as either a bludgeon or a sweetener to try to get somebody to go along on another bill. It's never passed on its own as a standalone type of important tax credit. It's always used as an extra little bit.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, why it has been turned down over the past 8 times that that's come up for a vote. Now, environmentalists have criticized the package, though, because it also extends tax credits for refineries that process oil from shale or tar sands. Those are also sort of considered alternative, because they're alternative sources rather than being renewable sources. There's a difference.
So it's a sweetener for everyone.
It's a sweetener for lots of people. And tar sands are a problem because they're one of the most destructive industrial projects you can have on the planet, according to environmentalists. One group, climateprogress.org, they said to get oil from Canada's tar sands, which is where it's coming from for the U.S., more land must be excavated than was moved for the Great Wall of China, the Suez Canal, the Great Pyramid of Cheops, and the 10 largest dams in the world combined. Now the
we need the oil, don't we?
Well, now the technology, just to keep going with letting people know what's wrong with oil, tar sands, that it also pollutes tremendous amounts of water because that's used in the extraction process, and they use dangerous chemicals like benzene in every single well that's developed. So there are problems already that they're finding in Canada with the environmental destruction, poisoning of groundwater, inability to keep the groundwater protected, even though they do have technology that they try to do that. Now, they do have new techniques that they're working on to minimize the amount of water used, but of course, that's a continuing issue between cities in the West with ranchers. They have droughts, and so there's a competition between the needs for this oil extraction technology and cities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
People who want to drink actual clean water.
But we just gave them a whole bunch of money to do that anyway.
Yes, we did.
Okay, cool.
Tax
I knew
incentives.
That $700 billion was going to be well worth it.
Okay, now moving on to last night there was also the vice presidential debate.
There was?
Yes, there was.
Who was in that?
I think it was somebody named Palin and somebody named Biden.
Okay.
Basically, just to compare some of the
things that
they
talked about the global warming.
They did talk
about
that.
Palin says she doesn't want to talk about whose fault it is.
Yes, she's not interested in arguing about who's at fault. And I just saw a hilarious comment. Well, it was hilarious to me, at least, where somebody said, well, say you go to a doctor. The doctor says, I know you have a fever, but I don't want to talk about how you got it. That's not important.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't
in
matter.
In a sense, it's, I think, Biden had a good response.
Which I think Biden said something
like
that.
Yeah, he said, how can you fix the problem if you don't know what caused it in the first place?
Right.
Which is, a good point. Now, to go through some of the other points that they made, I'm just going to run through these. Feel free to interrupt, as I'm sure you will.
No, you go right ahead.
Now both Palin and McCain in their campaign talk about being energy independent, but it seems that based on their statements, what I've looked through, their definition of independent appears to relate solely to independence from foreign sources of oil, not independence from oil itself.
Oh, yeah. No. They want to be energy independent in this country, not count on foreign supplies.
Right. And it only regards oil. Now, Palin often uses the phrase all of the above approach, and that implies that there is some support from their ticket for renewable energies like wind and solar. But according to climateprogress.org, McCain's voting record on energy matches that of Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma.
I remember him. He's the one who called when Al Gore was testifying. It was unbelievable.
I know. I can't remember what he said, and I wish I had a clip of it.
That was the one, actually, where he was filibustering, wouldn't let Al Gore talk. It was right after the 06 election, and the Democrats had just come in. Barbara Boxer was in charge of the committee.
And she shut him up, and she said, elections have consequences, sir. You're no longer in charge of this committee. I am now.
Yeah.
And so, basically, he's got the same voting record as Senator Inhofe, who calls global warming a hoax. Perpetrated, So let's see.
Is it possible John McCain is a hoax?
You know, I don't even know how to answer that.
Well, you know, he says, I'm for energy independence. It's a hoax. He's a hoax.
Well, now she says, now Palin says they support alternative energies, but the only alternatives they ever mention are nuclear and so-called clean coal. Now, Palin also mentioned so-called clean natural gas, and, you know, the silly thing about that is that any fossil fuel by its nature is not clean. It burns something. It has an emission. There is no such thing as clean fossil fuels.
Now, Obama says he's in favor of clean coal.
Yes, but we're have to get to a more detailed clarification of what clean coal is. There is no such thing as clean coal. What they're really talking about, I mean, one can only guess what they're really talking about, is carbon capture and sequestration, which is much harder to say.
Fancy. That's a $5.
But we'll move on to that. I'm going to finish up what Palin had to say, and then we'll get into...
Palin's
not
in favor of nuclear either, by the way.
What do you mean?
She's in favor of nuclear.
Oh, you're right. Okay, you surprised me there, but you're right. She still can't even, you know, it's like...
I said at the top of the show, she is George Bush. She's in favor of nuclear.
Nuclear.
Yes,
okay, now she also talked about clean natural gas, and just to make sure everybody knows that it's not clean at all. In fact, the natural gas industry is responsible for almost 19% of the gas emissions in, greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. So
who is?
The natural gas industry.
Oh, really?
In the process of drilling, extraction, right. Processing, and then the actual use and burning, because it is burning it, that it's almost 19% of our
greenhouse gases.
So now
you're against all fossil fuels. Am
I
right
about
that?
I'm not against it. I think that if we're going to get away from having these carbon emissions, then we must get away from burning things made of carbon.
Right.
It's pretty simple. Now, she also seems to have...
But now the Republicans would say their priority... Don't look at me like that.
No, go ahead. I was moving on to, you know,
the Republicans would say that, you know, the economy, if we don't have oil, it's going to kill our economy. We've got to drill, baby, drill.
Right. They do say that. Now, the question that
I have... And don't we need to? I mean, you want $4, $5, $10 a gallon
gas? We are in the place where we are approaching a transition. You know, there are people who say that, oh, peak oil doesn't exist. You know, that's just a myth. And, of course, that was 5 years ago. Now people are talking about it as if it's always been possible that we could run out of oil. And, gosh, what's going to happen when we do run out of oil? Resource wars and all sort of ideas have, you know, have been...
Mad Max.
But, you know, the question being that if we're going to rely on a source that is finite, that is a commodity, those are two problems. Finite means it can end. As a commodity, it means somebody packages it and sells it. And so when there is less and less quantity of it, the price goes up.
Right.
We are going to approach a point at which there is no more oil. And as we get closer to that point, it's going to cost more and more. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
We can, some people say, wait until the need arises and we'll just create the technology right as we need it. But, you know, we're sort of already approaching that. We're already to the point where the cost of gas is approaching making it approaching parity with other kinds of technology.
But
and so we're developing this other kinds of technology. We're not there yet.
So
we still have to have gas.
Is it your belief, Desi Doyen, that we're not that we should not continue, we should not widen the drilling and so forth, that we should just get as quickly as possible to alternative fuels? Or do you think we need to do additional drilling and so forth to survive until we're good to go with the electric cars and that sort of thing?
Well, it brings up a good question. I mean, I think we have
to have
a balanced approach, which would mean that we have to stay on gas. We have no other alternatives right now that are deployable across the United States or across the world for the degree that we already have people relying on cars.
Right.
But we also have to, if we're going to get our technology and be out in front of the development of this technology and lead the world so that we're the ones who own it, not other people, we don't have to buy it. The technology from them to have other types of fuels, other types of energy, other types of cars, for example.
We went to the moon in 9 years after John F. Kennedy said we want to go there, and yet we can't come up with an electric car.
Well, we have come up with an electric car.
And we destroyed them. GM's Who Killed the Electric Car.
Yes, it's a great movie. Everybody should watch Who Killed the Electric Car.
Right.
It does give you a great idea about what those kinds of things are. And I got to run now. So,
you got to give me one more.
I have so much more. There's like the whole debate.
We'll do them on Monday.
Okay.
Wait,
well,
we're not going to be on air on Monday. Okay.
So
basically,
you know, there's
you
a lot that they
hear.
Said. You know, one of the things I wanted to point out for a fact, though, is that, you know, how she refers to clean natural gas and, oh, the tiny, tiny footprint. How dare, you know, Joe Biden say that, you know, that there's something wrong with the environmental problems caused by extraction of fossil fuels, that it can be done much less pollution, much less disruption to the environment. Now, you know, sure, they're creating better technologies that are less disruptive to the environment in the extraction process. But one of the things we did find out this week, a gas firm pleaded guilty to offshore pollution. Pacific Operators Offshore Inc. received probation and a big old fine for continuing to use a faulty natural gas line that stretched across the ocean floor off the coast of California. Now, the government inspectors found that the gas line was broken back in 1999. And only just recently, they discovered that the company secretly was using the gas line for storage.
How much was the fine?
Oh, I don't have it written down. I think it was like $45 million.
And how much did they make in...
well, that I don't know.
I'll bet they made more money.
Just
I bet
to go
it's
back,
worth it.
I just want to remind people there is no such thing as clean coal. It's other technologies. They're using that as a shorthand. But by using the shorthand term, it's very misleading, and it gives people the wrong impression that we can actually do this. Clean coal, carbon capture and sequestration is at least 10 years away, according to the U.S. Department of Energy.
Desi Doyen with our Green News Report. We will, of course, have more on Monday. Oh, no, we won't. We're not on the air. We don't have a show. But Harrison, maybe we can trick him in doing the Green News on Monday. Well done, Desi. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Right. What are you making the face?
I want to give this more.
I know.
There's
you should,
so much more.
Next Monday will be great.
Thank you.
All right, Brad Friedman in from Malloy. Your calls straight ahead.
Burning fuel and using steam, they generate
electricity.
Turn that generator by any means you're making up.
All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, muckraker, troublemaker, in for the final few minutes for Mike Malloy. From bradblog.com, and come visit us there after I leave you tonight, because I may not see you soon, but I'll need ya. We need an army of ragtag patriots on the ground fighting for every single vote this year. It's all that matters. It is the votes, stupid. Let's take a call. We can fit in your call, maybe, 800-989-1480. Let's go real quickly to Ted in Los Angeles. A lot of calls from Los Angeles. I feel loved here in my hometown. Hey, Ted. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's up?
Well, thank you very much. Brad, this is Ted Newsom from Hustler Magazine.
Oh, Ted, how are you, sir?
I'm just fine. Carry on. Do some good work.
I'm trying, Ted. I'm doing my best. And you know what? Let me give some props to Hustler Magazine. You guys have been, and I'm ashamed to say it, but in the corporate media, and we will call you corporate media for this purpose, have been hands down the best coverage of election integrity concerns for the last 4 years. While no one else would talk about it, Hustler did, and even let me do it in your pages. Talk about election integrity. Yeah.
Proud to let you look rabble-rouse there.
Well, thank you.
It's astounding to me that that people won't come near it. I share the congresswoman's concern earlier. I too am puzzled, but I've got a feeling that the bad guys simply have something on everybody so they keep their mouths shut.
Well, you know what? I don't know that that's... A lot of people have said that, oh, why aren't the Democrats doing something? Oh, they must have something on them. I think they're just cowards. I think they're just scared to death. And you know what they're scared of? They're scared of the media. They're scared that Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, Michael Savage, all of these jerks are going to say something mean about them as if they won't say something mean about them. If, you know, anyway, they're going to. They just need some, how do we say it, balls.
Some testicular functions there.
That would be nice.
I want to pick up on something that I think is very important you said in the first hour. Getting involved. And one way, but by the way, we're talking a lot about voter caging and
yep.
striking people from the rolls and things.
Yep. All over the country. Meltdown coming.
One way that I found, ironically enough, to avoid that is to register as a Republican.
Yeah, because that's right. Because you might have a better chance of sticking on the rolls. Ted, I got to run because I'm running out. Top of the hour. Thanks for calling in. Really appreciate it.
You know, carry on. Have fun.
Thanks, brother. And everybody else, go out and buy Hustler magazine. There you go. You know, got an excuse. All right, gonna fly through here. Bob from here we go. Bob from Portland, Oregon. You're on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey,
oh, Bob.
How are you?
Hanging in there.
Oh, terrific. You know, Caribou Barbie, as Mike calls her.
Yeah.
She's really well qualified to be vice president. She's able to shoot you in the face.
Yeah.
And she's been subpoenaed, she and her husband, up in Alaska to appear before the legislature.
That's right. And they laughed at the subpoenas. They didn't show up to the subpoenas because Bush and Rove, those guys didn't, so why should they?
So why would we want to do it all over again?
We wouldn't. We didn't want to do it in the first place. We need to make sure that every vote gets counted and counted accurately. Thank you, Bob.
Absolutely. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, brother. All right. Tom in Riverside. Is this our buddy Tom Corbett from Save Our Votes?
Yes, it is, Brad. How are you?
I'm all right. You're an American hero, and you got 30 seconds to tell us why.
Okay, breaking news. We have been invited by the Board of Supervisors of Riverside County, our election integrity group, Save Our Vote, to participate with an independent outside auditor who's going to do a complete and thorough audit of the Riverside County Registrar of Voters Office, and they are going to begin, if the board approves this on Tuesday, as they have indicated they wish to,
right.
We'll begin Tuesday afternoon, and we're going to go in and look at the most high-value targets, if you will, the biggest threats, and in terms of chain of custody and security, and their inability to actually account for and certify the votes in the precincts themselves. And
Tom, you
become a historic first.
It is, and it's because, and I'm gonna have to jump on here because we got to go. But it is a historic first, and it's because you guys down there in Riverside County have been fighting like hell for years, showing up every week at your county board of supervisors, using that public speaking minutes they give you at the end of those meetings.
Right.
If every county in the country did what Riverside County has done, we would have licked this problem by now. You're using Sequoia, Phoenix, Arizona, who I know is listening tonight. They're using the same crappy voting systems, and they need oversight like you provide down there, Tom Corbett. How can people help out? Do you have a website? Quick.
Yes, Save Our Vote. That's SaveRVote.com.
SaveRVote.com. Go help him out. He's a hero. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Brad. You're my hero, too, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that's going to do it for me here on the Mike Malloy Show. I want to thank Jason Jeffries and Desi Doyen here in the studio, Ian Huff up there at Nova M, Agent 99 over at bradblog.com for manning the chat rooms. My great appreciation to Nova M, Kathy Malloy, and Mike Malloy for allowing me to sit in here all this week. I've enjoyed it. Harrison is in next week. Mike's back on Tuesday. See you on the blog.